Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 673. It's your favorite football talking analysts anywhere on God's green earth. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross here to break it down for you. It's the NFL divisional round that we are previewing this week, taping this on the final day of our eighth year of existence, as January 14th, 2007 is the date the FDH Lounge first came on the air. So as we're taping this, tomorrow is the big anniversary. Yeah, the final day of 8 years, my friend, and get ready to move into the ninth year. We are, of course, celebrating that with the ongoing Pantheon, the final segment of which will be posted as we're taping this tomorrow, Thursday, January 14th. So it's a great time in the FDH Lounge. We're talking playoff football. We've been going through our Pantheon segments recently. For me and you, Kyle, much more success as we've been having throughout the year. 3-1 for both of us in last week's games, bringing me to 138, 117-5 on all my plays for the year. Now poking my head above 54% for the year on all of the games. You, Kyle, 3-1 last week, as I say, 55-45 for the year. We are both in the black, my friend.
Yeah, and sort of par for the course, I wrote this on the Facebook page, is that anyone who's been listening all year knows that you and I sort of approach these games from a different mindset, yet both of us ended up profitable in the regular season. And par for the course, like I said, we disagreed on two games and split them, but the two we agreed on, obviously we were both right, those being, which two did we agree on last week? We agreed on Cincinnati and we agreed on Green Bay. Those are both right.
That's right.
You got me on the Kansas City-Houston game. I got you on Seattle-Minnesota. So kind of funny how that works out, that, you know, we can disagree, and that yet both of us, you know, wind up being profitable in the end. So it's pretty good.
Absolutely.
From what I understand, talking to you before the program, that it may be more of the same this week, where we agree on two of the games and we'll disagree on the other two.
Exactly. Probably means another 3-1 week for both of us if that is prolonged, and I'm sure it probably will be. By the way, speaking of four things, before we get started here, I have to give a shout-out here to one thing that has probably gone defunct since last we talked, and three that are definitely defunct since last we talked, the probably defunct San Diego Chargers. Sorry about that, fans of San Diego. We'll see if that comes to pass or not. The three things that are definitely defunct since the last time we talked: A, Lawrence Phillips; B, coincidentally, the St. Louis Rams. The St. Louis Rams. How about that? You know, like Stan Kroenke planned it that way, huh? Allegedly. And C, any remaining respect anywhere in the football universe for the Cincinnati Bengals, a true repository of human garbage, a team without character, a team more about keeping it real, Team Allen Iverson. What a disgraceful performance. And, yeah, the Steelers, Joey Porter, they're dirty cheaters too, write it up, allegedly. Cheaters in the Super Bowl against Seattle, allegedly. But they are smart enough to get away with it, and the Bengals aren't. And that's the thing I overlooked with the Bengals all year long. It doesn't matter if they have a soulless ginger at quarterback. He's turned the corner. I continue to believe that. But the team itself, no character, and they're never going any further than they did last week until they dump the human garbage off their team. Kyle Ross, you heard it here first.
Look, that was a little tamer and less odious than I was anticipating from you. And I appreciate that. I came on this week fully anticipating me screaming, "I do not subscribe to anything you're hearing, outside world." But look, a couple things here. Jim Nance, I thought, turned in a terrible performance last Saturday night in play-by-play with that game. He's bad anyway. Sims is atrocious. But
yeah,
this notion that, and Nance was trying to advocate this, I feel, at the end of the game. And it was easy for him to do it, and it gained a lot of steam in real time. But this notion that the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, took the NFL into the abyss last weekend is wrong. It was a really stupid play by two guys who have a history of poor decision-making, both on and off the field. There's no denying that. But the hit itself, I mean, this idea, you know, I read, and granted, the guy was a Steelers fan. I'll protect his name. He's a friend of mine, former roommate in college. He's like, Perfect should be in jail. You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. It was, those hits used to happen all the time in the league. And I'm not excusing what he did. There's two things that made the hit really stupid. One, that we're just smarter and we understand what, you know, hitting someone else like that, you know, does, you know, we're more educated people. I'm like, you know, in the 70s, something like that would have been celebrated. Heck, 5 years ago, the thing might have been on Jacked Up on ESPN, right?
Right.
And then obviously, situation, the time of the game it happened, you just got to know better. It was really dumb, but I don't think it was anything more than a dumb football play. I don't think that it, you know, speaks to where we're going as a society. I don't think it necessarily has any larger meaning in the grand scheme of life. It was just a stupid play by a guy who has a history of kind of dumb decisions, which is why he went undrafted when he was a first-round talent. But, and the fact that it was Cincinnati, obviously, see, I feel I learned my lesson with this team 2 years ago. Remember, I was the one, I think it was 2 years, it was the year they lost to San Diego in the first round of the playoffs. So, yeah, this was 2 years ago. Remember, I was really all about them. I was like, I think this team can make a run, expect the team in the AFC championship. And, you know, your boy, Raymond Smalley, got all over me after they were 1-0. And I kind of had decided at that point, you know, we probably reached a tipping point with this team. They do have an established ceiling. So, for me, I guess I wasn't all jumping up and down over the Bengals or Chokers narrative anymore because I wasn't shocked. I mean, they were an underdog, first of all. They had a backup quarterback. And, oh, by the way, they were kind of lucky to even be in that position. They were down 15-0. I thought the Vikings had the bigger choke job of the weekend, quite frankly. I didn't think the Bengals were the biggest chokers of the week. So,
well, it's interesting that you could have that discussion among two different teams. I'll tell you this, though. The first thing that comes to mind from a historical perspective when you're saying that hits like the one on Antonio Brown used to be legal. I mean, if you want to go back further in time, Kyle Ross, guys, Antonio Brown's skin color used to be traded for a pound of ivory in this country. Are you justifying that as well? I mean, come on now. Just because it used to be the case.
No, I think you misunderstood.
Aren't you the progressive here?
Whoa. I think you misunderstood me. I think you misunderstood what I was saying. I'm saying that it never was right to hit somebody like that.
Okay.
But in today's society, it's understood how dumb it is now.
Can I get you a little further and say that slavery was never right as well?
Yes. Thank you very much, Rick Morris. I'll tell you what. I'm glad. You know, it's nice to see. You know, it's nice to see that the GOP's coming out of that viewpoint. By the way, are you leading the charge on that or what? Oh, okay.
I throw it on
you. Give me a break. Try to do that. I just think that situationally it was a really stupid play, but it did not have any larger meaning. And I mean, a case could be made because of the Bengals' history that it was the most gut-wrenching loss in playoff history. I was asking a few buddies of mine, you know, compare this to, you know, here in Cleveland, we always remember the drive and the fumble in the late 80s against the Broncos. I'm like, compare this loss to those two, and what's quote-unquote worse? We all kind of decided maybe it was the Cincinnati loss because it was sort of all of those things rolled into one. You know, there was a fumble, then there was a, you know, Cincinnati had the ball, they fumbled, then they had to allow a drive, and the fact that, you know, this is what, the seventh time that Marvin Lewis has been one and done in the playoffs. Yeah, you can make a case that it's probably the most gut-wrenching playoff loss ever for a team, but, you know, I don't know. I'm not going into this thing that the Cincinnati Bengals have led the NFL into a new abyss or something like that. It was a dumb, dirty hit by an individual who does need to check himself.
And
he'll have time to get over it
because
he's suspended the next three games. So
he'll
have time
to
figure it out.
And to go full circle on us before we do this week's games, your takes are less odious than I was led to expect. You know, coincidentally, the same thing said to me by the parents of every potential Mrs. Morris ever. So you nailed that one right there, my friend.
Very good. Yes.
Very good. Thank you.
You always have to keep the takes pretty vanilla in front of any potential in-laws.
Oh, I know. I guarantee you, there's no such parents that have ever had a true read of this guy. I'll say that. But
I think that's kind of good, but it's also sort of bad.
Yeah, because the true nature is going to come out at some point, and quite frankly, it always does. We get into the divisional round games here. We start with the game Saturday, the only one of the 11 playoff games this weekend because of the scheduling with TV, where NBC's got two games, ESPN's got two games. The only game that does not feature a number one broadcast team on the games, the number two team at CBS is on this one. Past lounge guest Ian Eagle, along with Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn, it's the 12-5 Chiefs at the 12-4 Patriots, 4:35 Eastern Time, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, on, of course, CBS, and this is a game where New England in this game is laying 5 points, had been 4.5 early on. That's kind of wavered around there. In terms of just some notes about the teams before I toss it to you, I was 10-7 on picking the Chief games this year. Only 5-9-1 with the Patriots, the worst of any team in the league. However, here's the weird thing. I hit the last four. I was 1-9-1. I picked them for a big three pick. Obviously, Kyle, I had no idea how bad I'd been on Patriots games. I hit that one because I hadn't done the math until later. I hit that, and I hit the next three. So I've hit four in a row, but I'm only 5-9-1 for the year, which is kind of weird. In the final FDH regular season power rankings, New England third, Kansas City fourth. Strength of schedule based on the FDH power rankings. Kansas City 12th. New England 26th, kind of a surprising glass jaw. I wasn't expecting to see that in there. The impressiveness of victories index, Kansas City 6th, New England 15th. This is a game where when you look at it, the defensive numbers, when you're looking at yards and points, defensively very close on the part of both teams here. A little bit surprising just because the Chiefs have more of a reputation at the present moment for being a defensive juggernaut. Not that the Patriots haven't played good defense through the year, but I think there's a little bit of a gap in the public mind between the teams, and the numbers show that that shouldn't necessarily be the case. Offensively, again, if you just look at it, just glancing, it looks like your classic passing offense versus your classic rushing offense, and that kind of does tell the story of it, that for Kansas City, it's about the rushing and the short yardage passing. For New England, it's about basically passing it all over the field once they have a full array of weapons for Brady, which they should just about have this week. But in coming back to this again, I know this is a game where you and I differ, Kyle, but I look at this, this is strange, by the way, because you're the one that believed in the Chiefs more than I did coming into the season. But for me, this narrative that it would somehow be the biggest shock in the world if the Chiefs won this game, notwithstanding the fact they've won 11 in a row, I'm not going to say they proved a world of things to me by what they did to Houston, because a lot of that was about the awfulness, which I've been beating the drum about for a long time, of Brian Hoyer. But I think they're a live dog. If they win their 12th game in a row, the rest of the world is going to wake up Sunday morning, OMG, oh! I won't be. Now, I think it's 51-49. This is like a Stephen Avery thing to me on this. Where do I come down with Stephen Avery? 51-49, although I believe he should get a new trial. But 51-49 on who wins the game, but on who covers, it's the Chiefs all the way. Give me the Chiefs in the 5.5.
Wow, is that a bleeding heart I hear on the other line? Rick Morris, first acknowledging that slavery was wrong, and then secondly, you know, maybe acknowledging a little judicial misfortune in the world. Wow, I can't believe this. Well, new year, new Rick Morris, huh? In 2016,
well, my guy Rand Paul is a lot more of a civil libertarian than your guy Obama, I'll tell you that.
Good Lord.
Now that I unsettled you.
All right, let's get back to the regularly scheduled program here.
By the way, my arm hurts today a lot. Just throwing that out there. God, is it in pain?
Thanks for sharing.
No problem. It really hurt, quite frankly. I was about ready to talk. That's all I could think of. So you talked about last week, Kansas City and Houston. And earlier in the week, you and I hung out, and I mentioned to you that I couldn't recall another time that I witnessed a 30-0 blowout, and really it didn't improve the team who's won standing in my eyes. Did I say that right? Basically,
yes.
What I'm saying is I didn't come across any more impressed with Kansas City than I had been previously.
Okay.
Now, Football Outsiders had a pretty nice write-up on that game, and it did change my perspective a little bit. It talked about how really historic their domination was in two of the three phases of the game with the defense and the special teams. Even then, I just can't help but think that all they needed to do last week was basically put on their little red uniforms and show up, and they were going to win. Because Brian Hoyer was just so awful. I mean, that was one of the worst all-time playoff performances by a quarterback. I believe the next day Football Outsiders did an article saying that it was the worst performance in any playoff game by a quarterback since Kerry Collins in that Super Bowl where the Giants just got annihilated by the Ravens. That was one of the most awful Super Bowls ever. So, you know, I texted you, remember? I texted you, like, what, 10 minutes into the game? The Kansas City Chiefs
right.
advanced in the playoffs. Because they once they returned the kick and Hoyer threw some interceptions, I was like, well, that was the kind of stuff that couldn't happen if Houston had any
right.
hope to win this game. It's a pretty big upgrade, don't you think, going from Brian Hoyer to Tom Brady? Pretty big
yes.
step up in class. New England, it's funny that you were taking the tack that, you know, no one's respecting the Chiefs going into this game. I think they are, quite frankly. When you look at this line, New England laying less than 7 at home doesn't happen very often. They cover, you know, since 2001, I wanted to look that up, and since 2001, if they're laying 7 or less at home, they cover 68% of the time.
Okay.
And hold on here 1 second. I'm going to come up with even more interesting tidbits. I can't believe that I closed this thing down. I was so willing to set this up. I sit down, and it's, of course, closed. I thought I really
That's the way life
here.
Goes.
So, yes, if you want to do the do-do-do. So they're 24-3 straight up since 2010 in games where the line is 7 points or less at home. 19-7-1 against the spread. They lost those two last regular season games to the Jets and Dolphins. Those were division games on the road. I think Belichick's going to be showing a lot of the videotape from what happened last year when they played the Chiefs, and he's going to have his team ready. This is the one favorite I'm taking this week. You know, obviously we all know that all the road teams won last week. As far as covering, home teams were 2-2 against the spread. I think we see a home team as a favorite cover here to lead off the weekend. I'm taking New England.
All right, I have to, as is my wont here, ask a follow-up question because there's something you said that jumps out at me.
Okay.
And it's going back to last week in terms of talking about Houston. You were kind of like, OMG, this defense, the way they've held teams to so few points, whatever. Are you attributing everything that Kansas City did offensively last week to those turnovers in the field position? Because you still got to put the 30 points on the board. Did not what they did offensively impress you, even if defensively you're kind of like, meh?
Not really. I'll be honest with you. Not really.
Okay.
Remember, one of the touchdowns came from special teams.
Okay.
And a lot of the scoring came late when I think, you know, Watt got hurt for Houston. And I think Houston's will was broken, quite frankly, defensively.
Okay.
I think they looked to their own sideline, realized that, forget winning this game, we can't even score a point. You know, let's start making golf plans, man. I really think it was. Kansas City is an offense that, you know, tends to bog down in the red zone. You know, Alex Smith didn't have a great game. And, oh, by the way, we'll have to check the status of Jeremy Maclin going into this game, but it's not sounding that positive. And I think the Chiefs are going to struggle to move the ball in this game. I really do.
I get the impression he's playing, but, yeah, as of Wednesday, that is still up in the air. You're right about that. So there's a game where we differ, and I already know we're going to differ on the next one here, the nightcap for Saturday. Very curious to me, by the way, that NBC had this game locked in even before it was for sure that the Packers were going there. This could have been Washington, Arizona in prime time, which my theory is the Saturday night game used to be the most attractive of the weekend, and I think the networks are now thinking everybody's going to watch regardless. Let's spread the ratings through the weekend, because to me, this might be the least compelling of the games, and when you look at the point spread, I think it kind of tells the story. It's the 11-6 Packers.
Well, it's Green Bay, though.
Well, true, but again, what if it was Washington, Arizona? What's the justification for putting that in prime time? Unless they were that sure it was going to be Green Bay winning. So,
I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you exactly what it is. You couldn't put Arizona on at 1 o'clock on Sunday because, I mean, that's an 11 a.m. local
4
start
either
time.
Day. 4:30 either day.
Well, Fox might have been locked into that particular time. It might have been a deal where
that could have been the Fox
and
game.
I don't know. I'm not involved in these meetings, but it might have been like, okay, well, NBC Fox is getting one game, and it's the 1 p.m. on Sunday window. And if that's the case, it can't be Arizona. So
okay, well, maybe,
that might have been what it is.
Yes.
I don't know. I just thought it was weird.
To me, this is a deviation from the way they generally do it ratings-wise. Although, like you said, Green Bay packs a punch, but so do a lot of the other teams ratings-wise this weekend as well. 11-6 Packers at the 13-3 Cards, 8:15 Eastern time Saturday night, University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale on NBC, Michaels, Collinsworth, and Tafoya on the call. This is a game where the line has hovered right around 7 the entire week here. Arizona's laying that 7, and it's been right about there. I was 13-4 on Green Bay games this year versus the spread, including last week. Hit a winner there. 9-7 on Arizona. A little bit less handy on them, but still over 500. Power rankings for the teams. Final FDH regular season power rankings. Arizona 2, Green Bay 8. Strength of schedule. Green Bay 3, Arizona 20. The impressiveness of victories index. Green Bay 1 and Arizona 7, both teams doing very well in that. Just a couple other notes that jumped out at me here. The Cards with a third down conversion rate of 47%. This just in, that's not bad at all. The Cards much better than the Packers in passing yards, points scored, time of possession. Had anybody said that to you coming into this season, you would have asked to have them institutionalized involuntarily. Rushing yards allowed, that's another big separator between the teams here. I don't ever want to make a pick on something as simplistic as I'm really strongly leaning towards the Dogs in all three other games, and I don't want to make it a sweep. That's always a tough kind of thing to go, but ultimately that is kind of part of it here too. You put a gun to my head, or which of the favorites do I believe in the most? It would be Arizona, because, again, I know when last we saw them against Seattle, they didn't look so good, albeit they didn't have a whole lot to play for, because what were the odds Carolina was going to dump it to Tampa Bay? You can talk all you want about they could have been the one seed, but we all know that was never happening. But I can't remember which of the talking heads I heard saying this on TV, but I agree with it. The sense of Green Bay did that to the Washington defense, who pretty much showed that they are who Dennis Green thought they were. Let's see them do that to Arizona. So before we all go pronouncing the Pack is back, ain't going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. I like Arizona to cover Saturday night. It's not going to be 38-8 again, because that was fueled by some weird kind of turnovers and fluky stuff. But I certainly like them by more than the touchdown. Arizona to make it to the NFC Championship game.
I do agree with what you said about let's pump the brakes on the Packers back. I absolutely agree with that. Washington's defense is just not very good. And you and I were both on Green Bay last week, and we talked about how Washington really hadn't beat anyone of substance all season. So I personally was not surprised by that result. It was nice to kind of see the old Aaron Rodgers back, though. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, that kid who's just having fun and he's smiling out there. I'm talking about, you know, a guy who's one of the two best quarterbacks in the league looking good. I mean, it was just really nice to kind of see. It's also not going to be as bad as it was a couple weeks ago. You said it 38-8. That was a real whitewashing by the Cardinals in that game. And it's on this same field, for that matter. But Green Bay only needs to look to last week to see what happened with Seattle and Minnesota for kind of a glimmer of hope, right? I mean, Minnesota got annihilated by Seattle a month ago. They come back, host them again, and they were a lot better, a lot closer. Probably should have won the game. Now Green Bay's the road team, so that's a bit of a disadvantage. But this is a lot of points for Aaron Rodgers to be getting, who I do think got some confidence back, which is huge. I don't think he's going to appear to be as lost as he was in that first meeting with Arizona. And this is just the second time since 2011 that Green Bay has gotten seven or more in a game. The only other time, last year's NFC Championship in Seattle, a game they probably should have won, but of course lost, did cover, though.
Right.
I do think Arizona wins and advances to the NFC Championship game, but I think Green Bay gets inside the number. And a unit that not a lot of people are going to talk about but should is their defense, which has been quietly pretty good, actually, this year. They've had, you know, this, again, Arizona was a stinker. There's no denying that. We've beaten that into the ground. But for the season, Green Bay only allowing 20.1 points per game. That's
right.
Pretty good. I think they can keep Arizona in check. And also, don't discount the loss of the Honey Badger on that Cardinals defense. I think that's going to be a big deal moving forward for them. And, yeah, I like the Pack to cover here, not to win, but to cover.
Well, and it's really intriguing in terms that I agree with you, although I think the Matthew thing is going to matter more in any game subsequently, but I agree with you in that sense. And going back to the NFC Championship game of last year, yeah, for as much as a lot of us have bagged on Mike McCarthy for in-game adjustments or lack thereof, although this year he's turned a lot of that over to the offensive staff, from game to game and adjusting off previous games against opponents, they've been pretty good. He made excellent adjustments going into the NFC Championship game last year. We'll see how he adjusts for in terms of addressing the disaster against Arizona
Right now when it's fresh in my mind. You talked about maybe it's kind of flawed thinking, being like, well, I have to take one favorite this weekend. Remember, last weekend, and it's ironic we're talking about Green Bay now, it really seemed as if in the 30 minutes before kickoff, the public was betting Washington solely for the fact that word began to trickle out, there's never been a weekend where all four road teams have won out of that
time.
So, again, it is, you know, just because something is without precedent doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And, I got this trend, too. I got just trends popping out left and right here. People think that the bye week is this huge thing for these teams. Since 2003, favorites, you know, almost every team has been favored in this. All the home teams have generally, but there's been a few exceptions, but almost every home team coming off a bye has been favored. Those teams only covering about a third of the time.
Ooh, that's a lot of people would not guess that's the case. And all those people betting Washington for that reason last weekend at the last minute there, boy, all I can say is there's a lot more Mark Warren subscribers out there than I thought. Yeah, thank you. The divisional round on Sunday, it is the 11-6 Seahawks at the 15-1 Panthers, 1:05 Eastern time from Obama bailed out Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on Fox. Buck Aikman, Andrews, and Myers on the call. And in looking at this game, the line is 2.5. It had been 3 that the home Panthers were laying. It's down to 2.5 presently. I was 11-6 on picking Seattle ATS this year, only 9-7 against Carolina. Their rankings, final FDH regular season power rankings, Carolina 1, Seattle 5. Strength of schedule, Seattle 15, Carolina 32. A real glass jaw in terms of who they played. The impressiveness of victories index, 10 for Seattle and 11 for Carolina. So, yeah, that glass jaw is there, Kyle Ross, no question about it. Just in looking at the conversion rate, third down conversion rate for these teams here, for Seattle, 46.5%, the Panthers 42.4%. Very good on both sides, and both defenses all around great and comparable in a lot of ways, really, in terms of strengths, weaknesses, neither weaknesses really on either side to that degree. But I look at this, and to me, we talk about dogs, the livest dog of the weekend is the Seahawks. Two-time defending NFC champions. To be the man, you got to beat the man. Woo! I love me the Seahawks in this spot here. Straight up, don't need the 2.5. Seattle goes in and wins. We remember that they didn't look good against the Panthers earlier in the season, but they've been matched up against each other a decent amount the last couple of years, and the Seahawks have almost always come out on top. But again, yeah, part of it is, too, the glass jaw. The Seahawks have been there, done that, played those teams, the Panthers, 32nd in the league this year on the index. Horrible. They're going to get punched in the face, and we'll see how they respond.
You know, first off, I've been letting you get away with that Obama bailed out Bank of America statement line all year. And now that we got a little bit more time with these games, I got to come at you for that one. Let me tell you something. If it was President Cruz, they'd be playing in a freaking sandlot probably because the entire country would go bankrupt. So let's just, okay, don't give me your garbage, pal. Now.
Oh, that was outstanding.
Now, I'm totally with you here on Seattle. They're going to win this game straight up.
Yep.
If you check the tape from last week, and I hope you will, you'll recall that I said my hope was that Seattle would win close against Minnesota and kind of set up a little bit of extra value for this matchup with 15-1 Carolina. That's happened here. It's funny that I missed your text. My phone died. I was at a brunch white elephant party, believe it or not, while the Seahawks were playing the Vikings, watching the game. The guy who owned there was nice enough to have that on, so I got to catch the entire second half. But my phone had died, and I missed a text from you. Hey, it's going to reevaluate that. Your thoughts on the Vikings yet? It was funny that I turned my phone on after the game and saw that, and I was like, no, I won't. But what was funny is during that whole final drive for the Vikings that ended in heartbreak with the Blair Walshmith field goal, I just kept telling anyone who would listen, and quite frankly, there weren't a ton of people who were willing to listen, but there were a few that were, and I thanked them for it. I can't believe Seattle's going to lose another close game, is what I kept saying. They've had really bad luck in close games. I talked about it last week. They were 2-5 entering the playoffs in games decided by one score. What do you know? That stuff tends to work out over the course of a season, doesn't it, Ricky?
Boy,
and yeah. Carolina, you want to talk about luck? You want to talk about strength of schedule? Carolina 7-1 in games decided by one score this year. I think Seattle does win this game outright. It'll be close. I don't think they're going to blow them out. But I checked the tape. I went in the Wayback Machine for this one, Ricky. I remembered it, and I was very upset. I didn't have it written down anywhere. I was like, damn it, that was a good trend. What was it? How can I get it? I went through the archives yesterday.
Okay.
Caught one of the shows we did 3 years ago this weekend. 3 years ago I went back. By the way, why don't you tell the folks where they can get all of the FDH mini episodes here, right? They're on YouTube.
Wow. It's a great reminder. Of course, the FDH Lounge YouTube channel, but of course, everything is embedded at the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. Also, going up the entire history of everything. Now, this is taking a while because something like this does. It's like the Manhattan Project, but the FDH Lounge, click the podcasts tab on the main site. We are now putting past segments from full-length episodes, as well as all the mini-episodes as we get them up there on the FDH lounge directly. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Good. And then that's great, and I was glad that I had that available because the trend I was looking for was number one seeds laying 3 points or less in the division round. I remember this from a previous game, Seattle-Atlanta. Remember that one?
Yes.
The famous game that, you know, you and I couldn't believe that the Falcons were able to pull that one out of their arse.
Right.
Well, the Seahawks covered that game, okay, if you remember, as 2.5-point dogs. Number one seeds laying 3 or less in the division round, 0-5 against the number, 4 outright losses.
Amazing.
Seahawks.
Yep.
They go to the NFC Championship game for a rubber match with Arizona.
Yep.
Seahawks.
That is going to be quite awesome if that game does materialize. By the way, in terms of, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, in terms of NFL headlines from the last week before we go to the last game, I'd like to send congratulations. My team, the Cleveland Browns, just hired their new head coach, former WCW superstar Ernest the Cat Miller. So, Coach Miller, welcome to C-Town, and looking for great things from you in the years to come, my friend.
What? Doesn't look that much like Ernest Miller?
Look again, man. Look again.
Oh, no. I think you're stretching there.
I can't wait to see those dancing shoes on the sidelines of Brown Stadium. That's all I got to say.
Oh, boy.
But the transitional point here, the Browns' foremost enemy in this league, the 11-6 Steelers in the final game of the weekend at the 12-4 Broncos, 4:40 Eastern Time, Sports Authority Field at Mile High in Denver on CBS, Nance Sims-Wolfson on the call, and this is a game where the line has really been fluctuating as people have been trying to get a handle on whether Roethlisberger and Brown are going to go. Right now, it looks like it's up to Denver -7. I've seen it at 6.5 previously, opened at 5. It's kind of been all over the place in that area. Pittsburgh, I was 9-7-1 on picking their games this year. Denver 8-8, so I kind of struggled to get a handle on either team at various points in time. Final FDH Lounge regular season power rankings, Denver 6, Pittsburgh 9. Strength of schedule, Denver 9, Pittsburgh 18. The impressiveness of victories index, Denver 2, Pittsburgh 14 on that. You look at it offensively, Steelers lead in passing yards, points, third down conversion. Defensively, the Steelers 271.9 yards per game passing given up, a real glass jaw kind of a thing, to go back to that term there, although Denver doesn't look like the team to be able to exploit it at this point. And they gave up 40% on third downs this year. Getting that defense off the field has been an issue. But again, neither quarterback in this game anywhere near 100%. For Roethlisberger, it's the understandable reasons of getting dumped on his arm last week and dealing with a situation where he's only going to be able to throw intermediate at best, assuming he goes. He's not even throwing as at the time we tape this, but let's assume that he goes. Let's assume he's making short the intermediate throws. That is the state of the ostensibly fully healthy arm of Peyton Manning right now, who doesn't have anything left to get it out there. So it's so strange that both of these teams are kind of evenly matched as far as how that goes. The state of their quarterbacks. For Pittsburgh, yeah, I mean, Brown's got a concussion, but these guys have a history of miraculously healing pharmaceutically, allegedly. So, hey, he could be out there on Sunday. But I just get the sense that people are only looking at the negative side of the equation as it relates to Pittsburgh right now. If they didn't have Roethlisberger, I think that would be understandable. But for him to be in there against the Peyton Manning, who is Peyton Manning in name only, I just think that the value here is with the Steelers. I think they're going to cover. And I don't – to me, they're not as live of a dog as the other two teams. And by the way, I think whoever wins New England-Kansas City wins the AFC. I think this is for the right to lose to the winner of that game. But I'll take the Steelers as much as I loathe them, although, hey, I'm not a big Broncos guy either, being a Clevelander. But I'll take the Broncos to, or I'm sorry, the Steelers to cover in this game. I think they very possibly could win.
Yeah, I think Denver did get a real break with the injury. There's no denying that. Because this is a historically weak number one seed, Ricky. I had told you this what, on Monday or something? I feel like I was texting you real early in the week about some stuff I found. Denver has a point differential this year of plus 59. That's despite 12 wins. That's really low. How low is it? I went back to find the last time a number one seed in either conference had a point differential as low as plus 59. Do you know how far I had to go back?
A couple decades?
Yep. 1985, the L.A. Raiders.
Ooh.
Who remembers
them
for anything? No one, because they were one and done in the playoffs. They lost to that upstart Patriots team who wound up getting killed by the Bears in the Super Bowl. Even more jarring is since the year 2000, there have only been two number one seeds to have point differentials lower than plus 100. 2000 Giants, who went to the Super Bowl, and the 03 Eagles, that was one of the choking dog McNabb teams of that era under Andy Reid. So it really is a historically weak number one seed here in the AFC with Denver. The slurp job that Peyton Manning received in the regular season finale from Jim Nance kind of had me salivating, pardon the pun there, at going against these Broncos in this round. Still going to do it. I'm still taking the Steelers plus the points, but I am a little leery of Pittsburgh winning the game outright now. I do think Denver finds a way to probably win. By the way, they are 10-3 in close games this year. That is insane. Talk about regression.
It really is.
This year.
Oh,
there's
going to
be a lot
of
regression next year. I think this team won't even make the playoffs in 2016.
I think that's a pretty good bet, and looking at them. And, again, you would not be surprised to know that that was the number with only a plus 59 for the regular season. But this is one of these things, too, where this Denver defense, you know, we were hearing about them like mid-season, 85 Bears, 2000 Ravens, 2013 Seahawks. Didn't hear so much of that down the stretch. They're not horrible at this point. But,
they're very good. They're extremely good.
No, the halo's dimmed a little bit from midseason is what I'm saying. Just like nobody's talking about them as a historically great team that I see. They're being talked about as still arguably the best in the league. But I don't – are you still seeing a lot of among the greatest of all time, by God?
No.
Are you – okay.
No, but they've absolutely carried this team, certainly through the games that Peyton Manning played early
in
the year.
You're right.
And it is – and make no mistake about it, Roethlisberger being limited and no Antonio Brown is a colossal break for a defense this good. I mean, Pittsburgh could struggle to move the ball. It's interesting that we were kind of amazed in the regular season meeting that Pittsburgh was favored by 7 at home. Remember that? You and I disagreed on that game. I was just aghast that Denver would be getting that many. And now things have done a complete 180. I think it's going to be another close win for these Broncos. And similar to last week when I wanted Seattle to win close to set up some value, I love it to be New England and Denver next week in the AFC Championship because I would be all over the Patriots. A little teaser for next week.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like I said, I already called my shot. Whoever wins Patriots Chiefs is going to the Super Bowl. So, but we'll see what happens in this game here, and again, we'll see who rises up. The games last weekend, not the most compelling by and large, going all throughout. I mean, one of the best probably was. Saturday night was an instant classic. Seattle and Minnesota for being a 10-9, garbage ball, nobody can move the ball game was okay, but. We'll see. I have a feeling that the games this weekend, by and large, are going to be better and closer. We'll see how it plays out. As always, my friend, a lot of fun breaking this down with you. One of my favorite days on the calendar, not just the sports calendar, but on the calendar as a whole, Championship Sunday coming up after this. I look forward to breaking it down with you.
Can't wait, Ricky.
It's going to be awesome. Four games this weekend, hopefully will keep us all entertained. Hopefully Kyle and I will keep on chugging along. I think that we will, and we'll catch you back here next week, everybody, breaking it down in the FDH Lounge.
Ever dreamed of owning your own home? If you're a council or housing association tenant, the government's Right to Buy scheme could open the door for you. Because now you can get up to £77,900 off the price of your home. So why not find out if Right to Buy can open the door for you? Call an advisor on 0300 123 0913 or go online to righttobuy.gov.uk.